are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. I'm joined by my three awesome co-hosts, Daniel Sperry, Robert Kerr, and Matt McCarthy. First of all, Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's finally starting to look like spring and feel like spring. We always get this false spring in Kansas City, and like for one day or for like a couple days, it's like 60 to 70, and then it drops down back to like under 40, and then potentially snows. And that was like this weekend, and the Sporting KC game was freezing cold. I was very happy that I was tucked away in the indoor press box. I got a nice fancy seat this week, I guess. So I was quite happy with that to stay warm then. And then today I got to open up my back door when I got off work. Looking forward to taking my dog to the dog park the next couple days. No sun, no snow, rain, sleet. So spring is in the air, and it is I'm doing quite good.
Robert Kerr, up north of the wall, are you experiencing spring yet?
I think it's much of the same. It got warm. It was a really nice St. Patrick's Day weekend, but then now it's back to winter-like conditions. But I'm kind of recovering from the pendulum swing from like nonstop soccer from Europe and United States league and regional competitions to going to like nothing going at all. So I'm in a little bit of soccer withdrawal after having a glut of exciting stuff, but I'm okay.
Oh no. Okay. And then out at a bike locker on the campus of Temple University, Matt McCarthy, how are you doing? And is your bike properly locked up?
I don't own a bike here, but I'm just here for a little bit of privacy. But I'm actually having quite the opposite of what Daniel and Robert are experiencing. I had a day off from school due to about 10 inches of snow. It's really coming down today. It's snowing sideways. I've seen people outside jumping in the snow from my window, and I don't get it. They're like, I don't know. But I'm glad that you guys are enjoying your 50, 60-degree weather while I'm trapped in my dorm for the next 2 days.
So I take it, Matt, you did not partake in the frat row, cross-frat snowball fight that I'm sure was taking place.
Well, what's weird is it's a Wednesday, and frats were throwing parties, but I don't quite understand why somebody would want to trudge through what was looking like a scene out of Lord of the Rings just to go to a party for about 3 hours to go home. I don't get it personally myself, but I'm glad they had fun.
Okay, Matt McCarthy going through the mines of Moria rather than going over the mountains. Okay, gentlemen, not a whole lot of soccer to talk about as far as club is concerned, but we are in an international window officially. The U.S. men's national team roster is out. We have 23 players selected by still interim head coach Dave Sarakin, and the United States men's national team will be taking on the nation of Paraguay in Cary, North Carolina, home of North Carolina FC, formerly the Carolina Railhawks, this coming Monday. And today, right now, we're going to talk about the roster. So, guys, let's get into it. First of all, at the goalkeeper position, we have Alex Bono from Toronto FC, Bill Hamid from I still can't pronounce that club in Denmark, and then Zach Steffen from Columbus Crew. If I'm not mistaken, guys, this is the exact same three that were selected for the January camp. I'm really excited to see this roster. I'm excited to see what Bill Hamid likes post-leaving Major League Soccer. And anybody who's been following me on Twitter knows that I'm fully on the Zach Steffen hype train. Still don't really understand what Alex Bono is doing there. I think there's some other better United States options out there, albeit ones that are a little bit older than him as far as some of the MLS starters are concerned. But Bill Hamid, I think, is still very much the heir apparent to whatever happens post Brad Guzan and Tim Howard for the U.S. men's national team. And I think Zach Steffen is probably the best, 24 or under young goalkeeping talent we have. So really excited to see how those two battle out. Does Bill Hamid get the start and then maybe Zach Steffen get the last 45? Really curious to see how Sarakin has these guys battle in camp and then ultimately who gets to play and how well they play against Paraguay. Moving on, Daniel Daniel Sperry, let's talk about the defenders. Cameron Carter-Vickers from Ipswich Town, Eric Lehigh from Nottingham Forest, Matt Miazga from Fiennes, Shaq Moore from Levante, Eric Palmer-Round, former Sporting Hinz City guy who is playing in Belgium, Anton Robinson, who is with Bolton Wanderers, Jorge Villafana from Santos Laguna, listeners will remember him from his time with the Portland Timbers, and DeAndre Yedlin from Newcastle United. Daniel Sperry, what do you think of this defensive core, and who do you think could potentially start against Paraguay?
I like this defensive core because this is like you're looking at your potential, a lot of potential center backs, and I think a couple of potential fullbacks as well going into the next World Cup cycle. Matt Miazga, I think, is a guy that's I won't pencil him in yet, but Seth Davis made mistakes this tournament, the NCAA tournament, by saying, you know, Virginia, Sharpie, put him in their next round. I almost feel comfortable saying Matt Miazga, Sharpie, he will be the main center, at least the main center back, as the U.S. men's national team moves forward, hopefully alongside John Brooks. I think that's a partnership in the future that will go quite well. But I understand what they're doing is they're trying to give everybody within their youth system a look, which means guys like Cameron Carter-Vickers, guy who's been playing very well with Ipswich Town, Eric Palmer-Brown, who was fantastic with Sporting Kansas City in the limited time he got last year. It's kind of hard to play and get regular playing time when you have two veterans, a U.S. men's national team regular in Matt Beisler, the defender of the year, and have the best defensive record in soccer. They're not going to – Peter Vermees isn't going to want to change that too much. So he didn't get a whole lot of playing time with Sporting KC after the U-20 World Cup until some guy – until a few things popped up that he got time in. But so with Man City now on loan to Kortrijk in Belgium, I'm interested to see what he does. I'm also interested to see where Jorge Villafana fits all into this. I feel like while there's a lot of guys who are getting their first chance, I feel like Jorge Villafana may be on his last legs with the U.S. national team. I haven't been overtly impressed with him in the time that I've seen him at left back. I'm intrigued to see what they do with that left back position. But if there's any guy on that defenders group that I really am kind of penciling in, is Shaq Moore, who is a starter with Levante in La Liga. He's a very dynamic two-way outside back. He can also tuck inside. He has a very mobile passing center back as well. So there's a lot of upside with him, and he's been doing some really good stuff. And I don't even think he's turned 21 yet. So, you know, overall, this defenders group has a whole lot of promise, a whole lot of youth, and I'm quite excited to see some of these guys come this weekend.
Absolutely, Dan. I believe Jorge Villafana is the only non-European-based club player that's picked in this defensive core. I can't remember the last time I could say that with the U.S. men's national team and a lot of really, really young guys. I agree with you. I think Shaq Moore is probably the best young defender eligible for the U.S. men's national team who nobody has heard of at this point. Moving on, Matt McCarthy. We've got a plethora of midfielders on this roster. Tyler Adams, who is, you know, kicking things, you know, left and right for the New York Red Bulls. We've got Marky Delgado from Toronto FC, Weston McKennie, who plays for Schalke, Jonathan Tignagby with Atlanta United, previously the Portland Timbers, Christian Roldan of the Seattle Sounders, Kenny Saif, who plays for Anderlecht in Belgium, Will Trapp from Columbus Crew SC, Tim Wei from Paris Saint-Germain. What do you think about this midfield core, and how much on the Tyler Adams train are you?
I really like Tyler Adams. I feel like he's really grown into a leadership role with New York Red Bulls over the last year, you know, and I think that serving last year with Sasha Kljestan, I think that gave him a lot of understanding on how to be, you know, and I hate repeating myself, but how to be a leader on a team. And, you know, I could really see Tyler Adams become one of the faces and one of the vocal leaders of the United States men's national team. A name that you didn't bring up was actually Kakuta Mane from Pachuca. Now, he was added March 19th, so a couple of days ago. And personally, I don't really get that move. He's only played one game for Pachuca so far, and he signed after the MLS season. So I don't really get Kakuta Mane being on the roster. But for right now, the midfielders, if I'm going to pick out four midfielders that I could say would make the start or see significant game time, I think would be Tyler Adams, Darlington Nagby, Christian Roldan, and Weston McKennie. I'm really excited to see Tim Weiss, see what he can do. He's gotten quite a bit of time for Paris Saint-Germain. I didn't even see Will Trapp. Will Trapp actually could be in there for the significant game time. I mean, he even could be the captain like we've seen in the past. I think this midfielder core is young. I think it's very experienced as well. I'm really excited to see Weston McKennie. Tyler Adams, really excited to see him. One name I'm also confused, Marky Delgado, but I don't know too much about Marky to make a comment about him. But like I said, very talented and a lot of potential.
Excellent stuff, Matt McCarthy. And then last but certainly not least, only three forwards on this 23-man roster. Robert Kerr, we've got Andrija Novakovic, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He plays for Telstar in the Netherlands. We have Rubio Rubin, who plays for Club Tijuana in Mexico, just got knocked out by the New York Red Bulls. And then longtime U.S. men's national teamer Bobby Wood, who is now with Hamburg in the Bundesliga. Robert, only three forwards here, but two ones who we've got some familiarity with. What do you think of these guys?
It's an interesting mix. Definitely not the strong suit in this camp, the forwards. Someone who was a big player in the failed World Cup campaign, Bobby Wood, who's kind of had a negative spiral since the U.S. Lost out on the World Cup finals. Apparently, he's only scored one goal in 20 appearances for Hamburg over in the Bundesliga. He is 25 years old, so he would still be in the conversation come, you know, Qatar World Cup. And then, like you said, debut call-up for Wisconsin-born Novakovic playing second division. I believe I saw he scored 18 goals, and they're in a run trying to get promoted to the top flight in the Netherlands. Rubio Rubin, your boy, kind of a peripheral figure for USA, as well as a peripheral figure for his new club in Mexico. And apparently that 23rd spot that was only just filled by Mané was supposed to be Aaron Johansson's spot, but he had some sort of an injury spring up, so he could not come up to the camp. So I was going to say, not a strong suit for the Americans in this camp. I'm glad that Bobby Wood did get the call up. Just because I had a feeling he might fade away, but when he was in form, I really liked him. He looked very solid. Excited to see Novakovic. I mean, we're all talking about people slipping through the cracks. Is this a guy getting pulled out of the crack? I mean, hopefully he can translate his club form and really do something. I think he's probably got people's eyebrows raised. I don't think too many people have a lot of eyeballs on him, so it's cool to see him kind of get pulled from the weeds, and hopefully he's kind of a diamond in the rough. And then, to be honest, I haven't seen enough Rubio Rubin to really make too many comments on him. So I hope Bobby Wood can find his form, and would love to be pleasantly surprised by our guy over in the Netherlands, Novakovic.
Okay, guys, let's get into some hot takes and some predictions. We're going to start independent of the position that you just reviewed. Give me one player who you're really excited to see in camp in general or potentially against Paraguay. Daniel Sperry, I'm going to start with you. Which name are you circling in Sharpie from this 23-man roster?
I'm actually circling two. One is Andrija Novakovic. I'm really excited to see what he can do. Robert Kerr said, he's scored like 18-something goals for this Telstar team. I believe he's on loan.
From Reading.
Is it from Reading? Yeah, so he's on loan from Reading FC. If they can get like one of these random guys that just comes out of nowhere and has had, he's born in America, but he's got the random European upbringing that's given him an in to some good academy systems and good play. You're scoring 18 goals anywhere. That means you're doing something right. So I'm kind of excited to see what exactly he brings to the table, because I've been hearing about him on Twitter from some other fringy, weird accounts that cover, that literally scour the globe for American youth playing pretty much anywhere. The other one is Marky Delgado, a guy who slipped through the cracks, was a Chivas USA cast-off out of their academy system and upbringing, and was a dispersal draft guy. Marky Delgado has been playing. He's played really, really well for Toronto. He did very, very good as a backup to Victor Vasquez. Had a very nice breakout year last year. I know they've been trying to get Aguirre Ekeche kind of assimilated to that backup role, or at least assimilated into the midfield. So he's been getting a little bit more time over Marky Delgado. But Marky Delgado was a guy I wanted to see in January camp and didn't because Sarakan was being dumb. So I hope I get to see Marky Delgado this time around. But there was two guys there that I couldn't separate them in terms of wanting to see one or the other. Those are the two that I'm really excited to see.
Excellent stuff, Daniel Sperry. Matt McCarthy, who are you really excited to see on Monday?
I want to start with two names as well. Number one is Zach Steffen. When you see Zach Steffen, I've talked about him before, last year in the playoffs and then so far this year for Columbus. I mean, he's an outstanding talent. Goalkeeper of the future, pegged by many pundits, including ourselves. So I'm really excited to see Zach Steffen truly take over the spot. The second one, I'm going to go with Weston McKennie, the 19-year-old from Schalke. Once again, he's made 16 appearances so far for Schalke in this Bundesliga season. He's doing, incredibly well as a U.S. youth international. Making the jump from the U19s, the U20s, the U21 levels, and, you know, being like a Christian Pulisic, you know, getting in there young. So I really am excited to see Weston McKennie get minutes. I'm really excited to see Zach Steffen really show that he is the goalkeeper of the future.
Robert?
Well, that was more than one player there, Mr. Matt. But I was going to say the guy I'm looking for is Mr. Weston McKennie. He was the guy that everyone was excited about in that random standalone game over in Portugal in the fall. And he had a bit of a shining light. He had one goal in his one game. But then he's had a little bit of injury problems and stuff like that. So unless you are just like tuning into every single Schalke game for any appearance you might have, you might not have seen him. So I think I'm excited to see Weston McKennie, see if he can be, you know, does he stand out from the group that's there like he did in that game in the fall? And I guess that just that, can he be the star that we hope he is? And can him and Tyler Adams kind of get a bond together?
Excellent stuff, Robert. Guys, I'm going to go with Tim Way on this one. PSG, you know, academy player. He's broken in, just had his first two caps this calendar year in 2018. Granted, you know, PSG has a lot of schedule congestion between their league play and Champions League. And in addition to Neymar, they've got a whole bunch of injuries. But, you know, getting to start as a teenager for, you know, one of the biggest clubs in Europe is nothing to scoff at. I'm really excited to see what he can do. And can he use this as a springboard to maybe start and become a regular player? Possibly a regular starter. He said in an interview recently that his goal next season was to be a regular in the 18 for PSG. I'd say pump the brakes on that, but I haven't seen a whole lot of this kid. I'm really excited to see what he does in the other kind of red, white, and blue. Okay, guys, let's get to the bigger picture. U.S. men's national team taking on Paraguay this upcoming Monday. We will be doing predictions of the roundtable for the match, but let's just start with just expectations or desires or what you want to see. Dan, I'm going to start with you. Is there a particular formation you want to see? Do you want to see Dave Sarakin experiment? Is this just about getting guys, you know, some starting minutes? Do you want to see Zach Steffen starting it forward? What do you want to see happen on Monday?
Well, they don't really have like a true number 10 in this, so it'll be interesting to see what they actually do. I personally would like to see more of a 4-3-3 with one number 6 being Will Trapp, and then two midfielders that can do some box to box. But do have good defensive cover and can pitch into the attack. I think that would be Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie. And out of the front three, I want to see Bobby Wood in the middle with Kenny Saif and Tim Weah alongside of him as wingers. To me, that would be the most entertaining lineup. That would be something I'd like to see. I think that's probably the best way you're going to get something comprehensive out of this lineup, and it showcases a lot of the players that everybody's wanting to take a look at. And truthfully, the better prospects on this list. I would like to see Novakovic for a time. If they need to go 4-4-2, they could throw him on, drop someone, and I'm sure Tim Weah would hold fine as a number 10, potentially. Even Kenny Saif could slot inside for a little bit. So I think they'll be fine with what they do, but personally I'd like to see that 4-3-3 with just one true number 6 to shield the back line. I think Will Trapp can do that fine. And then you've got somebody like Weston McKennie and like I said, Tyler Adams running some box-to-box roles in front of them, just kind of roving all over, breaking up tackles, or, you know, breaking up plays, making tackles, and then springing some really truly talented attackers in a counter, or, you know, playing them in behind the back line. So I think that'd be that. If I'm looking for something of a game plan, I would love to see something like that, but yet again, I'm not the national team coach, so we'll probably get something completely the opposite.
Robert, what are you looking forward to on Monday night?
Well, I'm looking for something that has a little bit more purpose and organization than that game in January. I think that was a pretty dark game for a lot of people that watched it. Something better than that. I guess bottom desire expectation would be, let's see a goal. Let's see an American goal at that. Let's see some organization. I think I want to see a half of Bill Hamid, a half of Zach Steffen in goal. And picking a single player to be excited about is what was difficult, because there's a number of them, just like all the players that Daniel listed. There's a lot of players that I'm interested to see in action that I've read about but haven't seen a whole lot of. And then I think it might be a little bit difficult to get any sort of a chemistry with them, because there is a lot of parts that don't really play together, or have maybe until they get together in this camp may or may not have ever played all that much together. And I'm also curious, as a Darlington Nagbe skeptic, I want to see if he does look like one of the experienced players. Does he hold the line, and is he the guy that is the experience? Because, I mean, with his 24 appearances, I think he is only second to DeAndre Yedlin in national appearances, so at least for the senior team. And so I'm interested to see if he steps up to be like kind of like a cornerstone in this game, because I'm like I said, I'm a skeptic, so I'd be interested to see if he can step up and assume that. And then, I guess, just bottom line, let's see more of a direction. I really like the fact that this is a youth-oriented, and there's a lot of names that we're curious to see, and they're actually in the game. It's a shame that there isn't two games in this break, but it'll be exciting to see, just to see these names we've read about actually see them in an American shirt playing in a competitive game.
Absolutely.
Or I guess it's not a competitive game, but a full-on game with an audience, I suppose.
Matt, what are you looking forward to as we're getting interrupted by Robert's children?
You know, I'm looking forward to, like we just mentioned, the youth movement. You know, what I'm looking forward to on Monday, or looking for on Monday, is winning. You know, it's 2018. We're still 4 years away from the 2022 World Cup. You know, I'm already looking past this year's. But when you have a lot of this young talent here that's, you know, ready to take over, ready to take, you know, this team to maybe not the next level, but just take over for themselves. I'm looking forward to seeing chemistry being built, you know, youth looking to shine, you know, kids my own age looking to shine, like Weston McKinney. I'm really looking forward to see them on a national stage and them realizing that, you know, this team is theirs. They just got to have to make it theirs for the next 4 years.
Completely agree with you, Matt. My tidbit to be the last word on this segment, you know, echoes kind of that. Somebody here show me something. Of the 23 players on this roster, 18 of them have 10 or fewer caps with the senior U.S. men's national team. There is a guy somewhere in here on this roster who was in no way part of the U.S. men's national team plan under Bruce Arena, under Jurgen Klinsmann, who will have to be a factor for this team to get back to where they want to be for the 2022 World Cup cycle. So somebody show me something. Weston McKinney, if you get a start, this is your chance to do something that potentially a future USMNT coach watching this game or looking back on film is going to see and take into account in choosing whether or not to call you up for a future friendly, for a future World Cup qualifier, for a future hexagonal, for a future Confederations Cup, World Cup, etc., etc., etc. So Weston McKinney, show me something. Tyler Adams, show me something. Granted, he showed up with a lot lot more hype than I think any of the players currently on this roster. Christian Pulisic, walking into the U.S. men's national team at 17 years old, asserted his dominance and said, this is my team from an offensive standpoint. This is my starting spot. You are, like, a coach is going to have to create controversy in benching me or in not calling me up. I want to see somebody here on this roster come in with that kind of bravado and that kind of dominance. Just like Shaq Moore showing up and saying, this is my spot. Someone is going to have to pry it from my cold, dead fingers for the next World Cup cycle. So somebody show me something, give me something to be excited about, because we don't have a whole lot to be excited about for the rest of the USMNT schedule for the remainder of 2018. That does it for us in segment one, folks. We'll be back in the round table talking a whole bunch of other things and doing some weekend and USMNT predictions. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. It's time for the roundtable. Matt McCarthy, I'm going to start with you. We've got a couple interesting polls to talk about this week, but apparently a bunch of MLS players were asked, if you were MLS commissioner for the day, what would you do? Matt McCarthy, what were some of the most interesting answers? And if you personally were named MLS overlord for the day, what would you be doing with Major League Soccer?
I thought it was very interesting, and the fact that the MLS players aren't named makes it all the more, interesting for me. So 42% of the players polled had a say on whether or not they would increase or end the salary cap or abolish GAM and TAM. So 42% would like to see that the salary cap or the GAM and TAM would completely be, either increased or just completely abolished. What that says to me is that I feel like most of the players that answered in favor of that are players on clubs that don't like to spend as much money, i.e. the Philadelphia Union, among others. Other than that, greater freedom of movement got 15%, and I'm guessing that has something to do with choice of given Miguel Almirón, for example, if he wanted to go overseas and maybe answer to that, maybe he wants to have a freedom of choice of where he wants to go. Charter flights was 12%, more chances for young U.S. players got 4%. And there's an interesting quote that says, I'd implement a rule in which a percentage of young Americans under the age of 21 has to get a certain amount of minutes during the year, which is related to the Mexico's rule, the 9-9 rule for the game day roster. Other ones include 3% for artificial turf, promotion relegation got 3%, changing the calendar got 2%. If I were MLS commissioner for the day, I think I would increase the salary cap myself. I think a close number two actually would be charter flights, just so you know all teams have their own flights. But I just really feel like it's interesting that the money aspect, they want to completely end GAM and TAM or the salary cap. I think it's very interesting.
Interesting stuff, Matt, and I think certainly player movement might be hinting of the direction that the MLS Players Association will be going at with the potential expansion of or changing of the free agency rules come the next CBA. Moving on, another interesting poll that came out, Daniel Sperry, the MLS players got to anonymously vote on who they thought was the most overrated and underrated players in MLS. What did they come up with it, and how much are you laughing at Giovanni Dos Santos right now?
Giovanni Dos Santos was voted the most overrated player by the 104 current MLS players that ESPN interviewed during the preseason. He received 11% of the votes. I'm more shocked that Michael Bradley received 10% of the votes because I feel like there should be a decent amount of players in this league who have an appreciation for what he does, because I really do think that Toronto FC's midfield would likely fall apart if Michael Bradley were... So I thought that was kind of a weird thing that Michael Bradley was so far high up. But Giovanni Dos Santos up there, no doubt about it, made $5.5 million last year, 6 goals and 3 assists in 25 games. That's pretty terrible. 6th highest player in the league, especially after the year before, he had 14 goals and 12 assists in 28 games. So Dos Santos not... getting the most bang for his buck, not a surprise on my end as a San Jose Earthquakes fan. I love it. I also, another notables that were in there was Jozy Altidore received 7%. DC United's Paul Areola received 6% of the vote. Benny Failhaber and Tim Howard tied at 4%. I'd side more on Tim Howard than Benny Failhaber. And then Atlanta's Darlington Nagbe got 3% of the most overrated vote. I think this is kind of overall interesting. Also rated highly was Giassi Zardes, 7% of the vote, which is interesting. Mix Diskerud was the runaway winner the last two editions. But I think now we're kind of at a few. It's pretty clear. I don't know. I thought Gio dos Santos is probably the easiest one to pick on in MLS. But weirdly enough, the most underrated was Ignacio Piatti, and I wouldn't say he's underrated at all. I think people quite highly rate him. The problem is that they don't rate anyone else around him at Montreal, and it's virtually a one man show when it tries to get to goals. And he pretty much carries that team on his back. So I wouldn't call him necessarily underrated. But I thought that was an interesting one as well. Dax McCarty came in second. Higher rankings too were Will Trapp and Christian Roldan. Ilya Sanchez from Sporting Kansas City. The goalkeeper, Joe Bednick from Orlando, was up there, and I would agree with that one. And even Albert Rusnak as well was in there. So I think the overall winner of the most underrated player, I didn't think necessarily made sense. I think he gets talked about plenty enough. I just don't think his team gets talked about enough, and he probably isn't in as much as he would be, mainly because he pretty much has a joke around him team half the time, especially last year. This year, maybe they're working on some things up there in Montreal, but. Overall, I thought it was kind of interesting. I always think it's kind of interesting to hear of players, you know, kind of chime in on their peers. It's funny to me too, because like, and a lot of NBA players outside like hate Draymond Green. You know, they think he's overrated, and then he destroys them every single time out. So you never know. I think it's just kind of the overrated, underrated thing. It's kind of interesting to hear. Here where the peers are at, compared to what maybe some of the media members would say in their own right.
You mentioned a stat, you know, Giovanni Dos Santos, you know, $5 million last year, only scored six goals. Bradford Jamison, who made just over $60,000 in the calendar year of 2017, also had six goals for the LA Galaxy. Yep. So, you know, high reward, you know, high performance for not a lot of money, and then a lot of money for not a lot of production. Moving on, Robert Kerr with infant in hand. Robert, why is the U.S. men's national team playing a game in Cary, North Carolina? Their game on Tuesday against Paraguay will take place at Wake Med Soccer Park. That is home to North Carolina FC, formerly known as the Carolina Railhawks of now the USL. They were in the NASL last year. This is not the smallest venue the USMNT has played in recent years. A couple years ago, I believe they played in Chattanooga, Tennessee at a 7,000 seat capacity venue. Robert, why are they playing here when there's other options to play in North Carolina that are larger seats?
Well, I don't have an exact reason for the exact reason why, but there is a history of national teams playing there. They played the men's national team played a Gold Cup warm-up at this Wake Med Soccer Park 7 years ago, and then they played against Jamaica in 2006 in a friendly, which turned out to be 1-1. And then they've trained there a number of times. And apparently Dave Sarachin has fond memories of it as they, in 2002 and build up for the 2002 World Cup, I guess they had their last trainings at this soccer park before they went over to play the World Cup in Korea. It is, 10,000 person stadium. I've also heard another possibility, I guess multiple possibilities of why it's being played at a small venue is that it was a bad look when they had a pretty much empty stadium in January, so maybe they wanted to prevent that. And also there was news saying that they wanted to go towards smaller venues with higher ticket prices. When I looked up the ticket prices, the cheapest one, $60, and they have ones that go all the way up to $350. So maybe they're trying to reduce. Hello, that's my daughter.
She wants to go to the game with you, Robert.
Come on. I already took I took my 4-year-old last year to the Detroit City FC game, and he was like going up to random strangers. It's my first soccer game, so I can't wait for the day when I take her to her first game. But going back to the stadium thing, I'm guessing it's go to a smaller venue, reduce empty seats, plus be able to charge more tickets per seat, perhaps. But they're from when I clicked on the tickets tab, yeah, they're not cheap, and there's still available. So that's, I mean, it's not unprecedented, and I guess that's what I believe. And I guess against Paraguay, the U.S. is all-time 3-2-2 against Paraguay, and the last time they played against Paraguay was in the Copa America, where they won 1-0 behind a Clint Dempsey goal.
Okay, then. North Carolina fans, I guess if you want to make a bigger deal about you potentially coming into a larger stadium when the USMNT is in town, you know, sell out the venue and have an absolutely raucous crowd of hopefully 10,000. Moving on, listeners, the LA Galaxy are the walking wounded right now going into their game on turf against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Roman Alessandrini and Chris Pontius are out. Giovanni Dos Santos and Michael Ciani were both hurt in the Galaxy's last club game. That was at New York City FC. Sebastian Jet is back, and he played, I believe, 77 minutes in his first start of the year, kind of out of necessity for New York City. And then Gio was not called into Mexico for the international break because of the injury, and then promptly on the first day of training for El Tri, Jonathan Dos Santos was hurt. Note had a whole lot of updates for everybody. Everybody's kind of a day-to-day questionable for Vancouver. The Galaxy aren't very forthcoming with injury news. All reports are is that the Dos Santos brothers will be available for the Galaxy's next game, a home game at StubHub Center, which will be a sellout crowd in the first ever El Tráfico between LAFC and the LA Galaxy. So I guess that's good news, but I was jokingly saying with a few other people on Galaxy Twitter today that maybe the Galaxy need to sign Zlatan purely out of necessity because they need another body in training at this point. So the Galaxy are walking wounded. We'll see what happens for Vancouver. Hopefully they're healthy because, you know, having a really injured team that ends up being half Los Dos, half Galaxy against LAFC is not a good look, especially with how well their neighbors to the north have played so far. Okay, guys, let's get into some weekend and I guess next week pick-ems. We're going to start in MLS action starting on Saturday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live. FC Dallas hosting Portland Timbers. Daniel Spear, I'm going to start with you. Dallas got off this night against Seattle, and Portland's really, really bad. Are we looking at another drubbing for Diego Valeri and company?
I don't know about that. I think they've had – I'm going to do this study. I'm going to say this. I'm very intrigued to see what the overall record is for teams that come off of a bye week at the end of the year. I have my suspicions about whether that helps or hurts them. So Portland, is coming off a bye week. They've had a little bit of time to get their crap together after being miserable the first two games of the year. So I'm going to go with Dallas on this one just because they're fresh. And so far, the early returns on teams coming back after a break is that they don't look as fresh, and because they're not in their day-to-day routine this early in the year rest. You have a game, you rest, and you train for a few days, and then game day, and then rest, and you're not in that routine. I think that has a little bit of a play on it. And Dallas looked really good against Seattle, despite the 10 men and despite Seattle's issues. Portland's probably level with where Seattle is at their stripped-down worst right now. So I'm going to go with Dallas in this one. This is in Dallas, am I correct, or is it
yes,
in Portland?
Yes, it is Dallas home game.
Then, as always in MLS, ride the freaking home team. I'm going to go 3-1 FC Dallas over Portland. I'd like to see another Roland Lamov race.
Okay, then. Robert, who are you picking between FC Dallas and the fighting Diego Valeris?
For many of those same reasons, I got to go with the home team. But I have to say, I hope that Portland, for the sake of the new coach, Severice, I think that it's been a pretty rough start, obviously, for him at Portland. Hopefully, I mean, to Daniel's point that the bye week doesn't really work in the same way in soccer as it does for NFL. They usually look more out of step and out of form with a long break. But hopefully, with his this layoff, Severese can get kind of a reform their game plan and put up a better show. But I still got to go with the home team in Dallas, and I'll go 2-1 to the home team.
Matt McCarthy, you going to make it 3-for-3 for FC Dallas?
I am not. I don't even think there's going to be a winner. I think it's a 2-2 draw. I think the record I saw about when Portland starts without Chara, I think it's a shocking number to say the least, but Chara is a huge part of that team. But at the same time, Dallas isn't as strong as they have been in recent years. That's my opinion. If you think otherwise, then you know we could talk about it. But I don't think there's a winner this Saturday. I think it's a 2-2 draw.
Okay, I'm going to go with a bonkers 2-2 draw on this one, and I'm going to say that it will not finish 11-v-11 because MLS. Folks, this game is on Unimas, so it's nationally televised. And then according to the MLS app, this will also be available on Twitter. Not sure what language that's going to be in for the streaming, and it'll be on MLS Live for those of you who aren't in Dallas or the Portland, Oregon area. Moving on, at 8 p.m. Eastern, also on Saturday, New York Red Bulls will be hosting Minnesota United. This will be on MLS Live and Fox Sports. Let's go. Daniel Sperry, I'm going to start with you. Red Bulls looking really good and young, and Minnesota might not actually be bad? Question mark?
Minnesota is not actually bad. That was I did an interview for the Earthquakes, the San Jose Earthquakes radio guy does a soccer hour kind of a show in the midweek. In our interview that we discussed, he asked me, he wanted one hot take on the year, and I said, Minnesota is actually good. And that's what I've taken away from these last couple of games is outside of their first 60 minutes of the season against San Jose, they have looked really, really good. So I'm overall impressed with what Minnesota's been doing. Although it is New York Red Bulls, it is at home. Red Bulls, they did have some time off a little bit after their CONCACAF Champions League fun. They didn't have time off. They lost this week in RSL. That's the hard part there. I'm going to go with a New York Red Bulls win in this one, but that doesn't mean, and I don't want that to mean that Minnesota is bad. I just think that New York Red Bulls are actually a really, really good team. And I just think Saturday being on the road at altitude against a decent RSL team and all the travel and everything that they've had to do and playing a lot of games recently, I think it all kind of caught up with them on Saturday. Now they get to get back into their play every 7 days routine. So I'm going to go with New York Red Bulls. They're the home team. I'll go with a 2-1 win here, and Alejandro Gamara, it's his first MLS goal.
All righty. Robert Kerr, who are you picking between the Red Bulls and the Loons?
I'm actually going to go with a 0-0 draw. I think the Red Bulls, without a couple international players, or at least Tyler Adams, I think they might be a little bit flat, and I think Minnesota's competitive enough to keep them off the board. But and the only goal they gave up against Chicago was kind of a fluky one. So I think that it'll kind of be a little bit of a stalemate, and we're going to come away goalless in New York.
Matt McCarthy?
I don't think what I said is legit enough yet. So I want to go with New York Red Bulls. 4-2 at home. Yes. I'm going 4-2 despite the internationals, Tyler Adams being gone.
Okay, I think this game in performance is going to feel like a draw, but I think Red Bulls just being at home, you know, kind of, you know, with everything, Jesse Marsh seems like a tinkerer right now this season, and so far he's pushed all the right buttons with the exception of the RSL game, but, you know, that was a road game at altitude in the E-Western Conference, so I'll give them a pass on this one. I'm going to say Red Bulls in a nail-biter. I think both teams will come off the field thinking it probably should have been a draw, but, you know, Minnesota, you know, is spelled with, you know, an M, an I, two N's, and E. Give me Ben Mines for the New York Red Bulls scoring it in stoppage time to give the Red Bulls a 1-0 win on Saturday. And then last and definitely not least, folks, this coming Tuesday, this will be at 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1, the United States men's national team taking on Paraguay. Dan Sperry, I'm going to start with you. What happens when Dave Sarakin and company roll into Wake Med Soccer Park?
Well, there's always a big difference between what the U.S. men's national team does and what I actually want them to do. That's just kind of how this has been going lately with them. So I think the number one thing I want to see is I want to see a serious attempt, not an attempt to try and not lose this game, But an attempt to go out and win, an attempt to play good attacking soccer. We have not really gotten that from them in the first two games post Bruce Arena. There hasn't been much of an attempt to go forward. I think part of that had to do with they don't really have that much quality in the attack on these rosters. However, I think they've got plenty. I think they should go for it. And I think, you know, to play on the back foot the entire game, I think no matter how good Paraguay is, I think that's not ambitious enough for a young side that's kind of trying to find its way. I want to see them aggressive. I want to see them on the front foot. I want to see them pushing the pace. That is what I want to see. Like I said earlier, I'd put money on the fact that I see the opposite just because that's how it goes with Sarah Kane and the national team lately. But that's what I'd love to see out of them. If they do that, I think they can get a result here. They're at home. I haven't seen the Paraguay side roster, so I'm not too sure how strong it is. They're not preparing for a World Cup as they missed out. So I'm assuming they're kind of in the same boat as the U.S. national team in terms of they're just trying to get guys who they see as their future with the Paraguay national team into the fold. And, you're not going to see a whole lot. Like, you're not going to see Roque Santa Cruz. I don't even know if he's playing anymore, but he's an ancient Paraguayan forward who's been really good. But I expect to see somebody like Derley Gonzalez if he got called in. Hopefully – did Miguel Almiron get called in for Paraguay?
Yes, I believe he did.
Okay, so Miguel Almiron, I would love to see Miguel Almiron running at Tyler Adams and Weston McKinney. That sounds like a lot of fun in the midfield. So I think this game could actually be kind of fun if the U.S. Tries to take the game and go to the game and not try and sit on the back foot and let the game come to them and then try and make choices out of that. To play reactionary, not going to do them well, especially against a good, what seems like it's probably going to be a decent Paraguay side that's coming up. So overall, I just want to see the U.S. men's national team try and play attacking soccer. Just do it. Just go for it.
I don't know
how that result's going to go, but, result on this, I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw because that wouldn't surprise me at this rate. Hopefully this ends up with the U.S. men's national team win and some nice, attractive soccer.
Robert, what do you see happening on Tuesday night?
I agree with old Dan there. I guess it's just a hope for – it's really hard to envision what it's going to be, and a lot of the time international friendlies, it's really hard to gauge a score because, are they going to view this as like a game we're going to go at it with these guys and have a certain plan, or are they just – viewing it as, hey, let's get as many of these guys, get a cap for some of these guys. And what I want to see personally is what Daniel was saying. I want to see some of our exciting young talent play promise exciting young talent. I do want to see Timothy Weah play in the U.S. jersey. That sounds exciting. And then hopefully I want to see maybe Bobby Wood do some positive things as well as stalwarts like Nagby. I guess I want to see just like a sort of a plan come in motion. I guess that's hard to ask for with a coach that's on a dangling interim tag. But I just got to say something better than January, and I'll be happy.
Okay,
I guess to throw a score out there, let's say 1-1.
Matt McCarthy.
I'm going to make it 3. I think it's going to be a maybe a 2-2 draw. I think there'll be a little bit more scoring. But I'm just gonna reiterate what I said earlier. I think that this team is the future of U.S. and United States men's national team. This game should be treated as a chemistry builder. This should be a spotlight on guys like Weston McKinney, Tyler Adams. I think I can't see any winner in this game, but I feel like this will be a learning experience for a lot of them.
I am going to make it 4-4, gentlemen. I think we're going to see an experimental roster with some experimental tactics and not a whole lot of continuity. And I think much like the January camp friendly, I think we are looking at a very boring and forgettable 0-0 draw with absolutely nothing exciting happening in the 90 minutes. Okay, guys, that does it for us tonight. Daniel Sperry, I'm going to throw it to you. Any last words, and where can people find you on the Twitter machine?
You can find me at SperryDaniel94 on Twitter, and I have two quick notes. One, Ignacio Abate, former Italian national team fullback, currently plays in Italy, is reportedly working on a buyout mutual buyout with, I believe he's still with AC Milan at the moment. He's working on a buyout because he's determined to come play in MLS. That is according to reports floating around the Reddit sphere. And then some own personal fun reporting, coming to a soccer park near you or a potential USL team or MLS or US national team. We'll see. Jermaine Jones may be a soccer coach coming up soon. Saw him out here in Kansas City at the new National Training and Development Center, working on some coaching courses that are hosted at the site. I believe pretty much everything above a C-level license is hosted at this site. So the fact that he's in here doing some work, it looks like he's serious about his coaching career, and his playing days are effectively over, as we all knew it. But that's my last words. Enjoy the soccer this weekend. There's a lot of good games outside of the ones that we didn't talk about, and I'm praying with my fingers crossed that the U.S. men's national team plays good, attractive, attacking soccer.
I would totally watch a MLS equivalent of Hard Knocks with Jermaine Jones as a head coach. I'm just imagining it like a almost like a camp, and then like the kids are just way too out of line, and then Jermaine Jones is the camp counselor who's just way in over his head. Robert Kerr, where can people find you on the Twitters, and do you have any last words?
I am on Twitter, LWOSR2Kerr2, and I guess my final one is just another – it's just a little note from last week. I was talking about Kristen Press, NWSL drama / women's national team drama. She got traded to Houston, said that, no, I'm not going to go play in Houston. And she has yet to land, and I guess the news is she did not land herself on the women's national team roster. So interesting development there. It's the decision to back out or not want to play for Houston apparently has affected her national team call-up, and I guess that story is yet to unfold, because there's been rumors she's going to go to Seattle, but also a lot of accounts say that she is going to go to Sweden, where the transfer window is still open, and then move to a bigger team in maybe France or Germany in the summer. But just Kristen Press is a story to keep an eye out for in the women's world. And then I guess I'm just excited to see some international things. I do miss all the club action we had over the last few weeks, but hopefully Jamie Vardy and Marcus Rashford score a lot of goals in friendly games and no one gets hurt, as well as USA next Tuesday plays really well in front of a packed 10,000-person stadium.
Okay. Matt McCarthy, where can people find you on Twitter, and do you have any last words?
People can find me on Twitter at Matt McCarthy LWO. Also, friend me on Facebook. And I've got two last words. The number one, soccer related. I really don't like how the union schedule so far has been played out. You got one game, then you get a bye week, and you got the game against Columbus, and you got another bye week, and then you're going away. I don't quite get it, but that's not for me to understand. The MLS decides to schedule things. And then the second one is, I just want to say a quick, rest in peace to my friend Mark Dombrowski. He was the teenager found in Bermuda. He went to St. Joe's University. He was down there on a rugby trip, and unfortunately passed away on Monday night. I've known him for about 5 years. Really good kid. Never had a bad interaction with him. He was always smiling. He was always having a great time, and it's going to be a rough couple days for the state of Delaware, Delaware County and around the Philadelphia area. It's a sad thing, but just keep Mark and his family in your prayers tonight, and just keep him in your thoughts.
Definitely. Rest in peace to your friend there, Matt. Listeners, I am coming to you from a work trip just outside St. Cloud, Minnesota, not too far away from Duluth, Minnesota, and Chisholm, Minnesota, which are the headquarters of the U.S. Men's Curling Team, who won the gold medal at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. And then Chisholm is the hometown of John Schuster, who is the captain of the U.S. Men's Curling Team, and they were honored honored, actually, at the Los Angeles Kings-Minnesota Wild game that I was able to watch on Monday. So everybody is currently abuzz and still coming off of the high from the Americans winning their first ever men's team gold in curling. So, you know, big shout-out to them and everything they're doing. Go USA. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our written audio and video content at LastWordOnSoccer.com. Follow the website, Last Word on Soccer, across all social media platforms at LastWordSC. And then big shout out to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and the US and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at RoughneckScarves.com. Listeners, we might be back with you with a pod early next week to recap the US Men's National Team, but at the very least, we'll have something next week where we're talking about something that's hopefully not completely boring and unexpiring against Paraguay. We'll be watching on Tuesday. Hopefully you are too. See you next week.